Now for NHL Hour with Bill Clement and Commissioner Gary Bettman. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
This is the NHL Hour. Bill Clement with me, Gary Bettman. I'm here to take your calls, answer your emails. We're also going to have a chat with Renee Fazel, the president of the International Ice Hockey Federation. It's all coming up live now on NHL Home Ice, XM 204 and NHL.com.
In-depth look at the NHL. You're in the right place. This is NHL Hour on the nation's hockey station. NHL Home Ice, XM 204.
And welcome to the NHL Hour, live from the NHL Store, powered by Reebok in the heart of Manhattan. You're listening to us either on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, or NHL.com. Phone number is 877-NHL on XM. That's 877-645-6696. Our email address, NHLHour at NHL.com. Bill Clement with Gary Bettman. Gary will be answering your calls and your emails shortly as I look out over this store. Gary, I love this time of year. I truly believe that if we could bottle the holiday season, the world would be a better place. Everybody's friendlier.
Did you finish your holiday shopping?
I haven't even started it yet.
Well, I'm not so sure that this is a friendlier place for you.
No, I'm looking down at the store, and it's just buzzing, and I can tell you that not one family is trapping. They've all got a two-man forecheck going. I mean, that's what you got to have this time. What about you? What about your shopping?
My shopping is done.
How?
I have my wife do it, except for her present. No, it's a great time of year, and with the weather getting colder, and winter being here and the days are getting shorter, it's our time of year. I'm pretty excited about what we're going to do on January 1st.
I knew you were leading to that.
Well, actually, I wasn't, but you led me there.
Okay.
So, you know, I had nowhere else to go. But the Winter Classic, Buffalo against Pittsburgh at Ralph Wilson Stadium in Buffalo, over 70,000 fans on NBC and the CBC. It should be a fun day for us. All we need is the weather to cooperate.
No kidding. Any long-range forecasts right now?
Well, Farmer's Almanac said that it will be milder than usual, which has been defined to me to be 2 degrees warmer than typical, and the average temperature, not that I've checked this more than 100 times, should be 26 degrees.
Perfect.
26, 28 would be perfect, a little bit of overcast so that we don't have sun glare, not too much wind, and
yeah.
a slight, I don't want to be piggy here, a slight snow flurry will really give it the right atmospheric. But if it's a big snow flurry or no snow flurry, I'll take the no snow flurry.
Absolutely. I was wondering about, in the event that there is a serious wind factor and it happens to be blowing towards one end, has Buffalo already designated their home end?
Not yet, but that's something that we'll be doing with the general managers in the next few days. There are a series of, you know, logistical and practical issues that we could debate for hours, but we're in the process of buttoning them all down with the clubs, trying to anticipate all possibilities, which means the one out of 1,000 that we neglected will be the one we'll have to deal with. But you know what? Both general managers of both clubs are terrific guys. And, you know, we got to do the right things. Listen, first and foremost, this game counts. The points at stake in this game could be the difference in either Buffalo or Pittsburgh making or not making the playoffs. And so we have to do everything we can to get it right. The biggest thing that's out there, and it's beyond our control, is the weather.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll cooperate.
No truth to the rumor that the NHL might go to four quarters just this one game.
No. There's no truth.
Okay.
Just because we're playing in a football stadium doesn't mean we're adopting the rules of the game.
Okay. I was thinking maybe for win purposes, but I didn't expect the change. It shouldn't change. And as you said, it's not an exhibition game. It's for real. We want to jump to the Chris Simon suspension. Your office handed him 30 games for kicking Jarkko Ruutu, and that was after he picked up a 25-game suspension last season for his stick to the face of Ryan Holwig of the New York Rangers. Most of the people that I've heard from and that I've spoken directly to are not necessarily saying that 30 games isn't enough. They're saying that they expected more. How did you arrive at 30?
Well, first of all, and probably most people don't know this, I didn't arrive at anything. The way our supplemental discipline works is that Coley Campbell, as my designee, is the one who's charged with going through the supplemental discipline process and, in the first instance, rendering a decision. I am supposed to stay out of that. I get kept up to date in terms of that the process is getting fulfilled and they're doing whatever it is they decide they have to do. But I don't have a role in the final decision because if there's an appeal, the appeal comes to me. And in fairness to any player involved in supplemental discipline, I want to make sure that if they do appeal it, that they get a fair hearing before me. I actually read somewhere today that Chris was contemplating appealing the decision. The feedback that I've been watching in the blogs and in all of the various chat rooms and just reading what the media has said, either in writing or on television or radio or satellite radio, is that people are all over the place on this. There was one rumor that said the Players Association thought this was too much, that there were a lot of fans who thought it was too little. But as frequently happens with supplemental discipline, there's no agreement because right. It's hard. Coley has a great feel for the game. He's been a part of the game either as a player or a coach or as an executive for, you know, decades. And he understands the game, and no two cases are alike. And I know people always, when they either praise or criticize, they point to other incidents and they say, well, they did this here and did that there. No two factors are ever the same. No two circumstances are ever the same. I think part of what went into the evaluation here, obviously, was the fact that this isn't the first time that Chris Simon has been suspended.
Or the second or the third. It's
or the fourth
eight.
Or
yeah,
the
right,
fifth.
Right.
But as you pointed out, he was recently suspended, a suspension from last season that actually carried over into this season. And I think being somebody who seems to get involved in supplemental discipline on a regular basis was a factor in the decision. I know that there'll never be universal agreement on whatever Coley does in these cases, but by and large, not judging a particular case, I think he tends to get it right far more than he ever gets credit for.
Well, I was under the impression that you by nature of your position as the commissioner, signed off on the suspensions, but that, in fact, is wrong.
No, if I am involved in making the initial decision, then I think the Players Association would be the first to complain about the appellate process if there is an appeal. There are certain instances where I might get involved in a particular case, which you know is one where I don't expect it to be appealed. It's at a level where it needs my immediate attention, but for the most part, overwhelmingly, this is something that I entrust to Coley Campbell, and it was something that I knew I had to be comfortable with him doing when I hired him for the position.
We want to get to the calls. Just before we do that, Coley Campbell can't make an example of a player, can he? At some point, that opens up a can of worms that is, first of all, unjust, is it not? I mean, people saying, well, you got to make an example of this guy.
Well, you know, making an example is a difficult and potentially unfair standard. With all of the suspensions this year, the Downey suspension and the Bollery suspension, everybody was on notice over the summer that we were going to have an enhanced standard on hits to the head, and that this, you know, we sent out a DVD. It explained that this type of hit, you know, an unsuspecting hit to the head, lunging at the player, on and on. There were a series of criteria. This would not be acceptable, and this would be severely punished. And so when the longer suspensions came into effect, it wasn't that anybody was being made an example of. The example was set over the summer, and everybody was told this is what you could anticipate in the event the following conduct took place.
Okay, we're going to go to some callers, and I think we're going to start with a guy that lives in a town that I used to own a home in when I played for the Flyers, I believe. Fire away, Gary. I'll see if I'm right.
Alan from Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Yep.
You're on XM 204. What can we do for you?
Hi, Commissioner Bettman. It's great to be back on. About the Chris Simon hit, I mean, a lot of fans saw it. I saw it. And at what point do you just say enough is enough and suspend him for life from the NHL? Because, I mean, this guy's had 8 suspensions, a lot of people are saying enough already.
Well, you know, and that was what Bill and I were just talking about in terms of, well, the last suspension prior to this one was 25. This is 30, so that's 55 games over 2 seasons, really less, 55 over what may be a season in time if you count the end of last season and the beginning of this season. The question becomes, at what point do you want to deprive a person of his livelihood? And at least Coley made the decision in this case, under these circumstances, to up the number of games to the longest suspension doled out like this in league history. And he was comfortable that this is what it called for. As we said before, there were some people who thought it was too much based on the nature of the act, even taking into account that this wasn't Chris Simon's first suspension. And there are other people who said, well, just get rid of him. You know, that's too easy to say, and on any humanitarian level, too hard to do. And so, you know, the quality of mercy is never strained at some point. And so here we had a case where Coley decided to up it to 30 games, which by any account, I think that's almost $300,000 in salary. By any account, Chris Simon is paying a large penalty for what he did. If he appeals it and he thinks it was too large, then I'll have to review it and determine whether or not I think it was appropriate. Should it have been more? People can always be on both sides of these debates.
Well, the fact that there are people on both sides is, to me, at least an indication that Coley's somewhere pretty close on this one.
Well, that, by the way, that's the right answer and the easy answer. If everybody said it was just right, then we'd have to reevaluate what we did because, you know, nobody ever agrees on these things. And frankly, if everybody thought it was too light, then maybe it was a mistake. And if everybody thought it was too harsh, maybe it was a mistake. But, you know, what frequently happens on these, and they're very difficult judgments to make, as we've discussed.
Yeah.
So many factors to take into account. If there's disagreement on the ultimate decision going both ways, it means you're probably somewhere in the ballpark. Next caller, Brian from Pittsburgh. You're on XM 204.
Hey, Bill, Mr. Bettman, how you doing?
How come he's Bill and I'm Mr. Bettman? You can call me Gary.
Okay, Gary, how you doing?
I'm great. How are you? Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. First of all, Gary, I want to thank you for, I know you had a lot to do with helping keep the Pittsburgh Penguins in Pittsburgh, and I want to thank you for that.
You're welcome, and the Penguins belong in Pittsburgh. It was a labor of love, and it was important to do because we've got great fans in Pittsburgh like you.
And please tell me these rumors aren't true, that sooner or later the NHL is looking into having a shootout in the playoffs. In overtime?
We've never discussed doing it other than to say we would never do that. The only thing that there's been any discussion about in the last couple of years relative to playoff overtime, and it comes in the context of saying that when you have a team playing a 3 or 4 period overtime marathon, it saps them for the rest of the series and maybe the rest of the playoffs. And by the way, at 2 a.m, who's still watching, who's still in the arena? Because it's getting late, particularly if it's a weekday night. What has been suggested, and we don't get too many of those games, by the way, and my own view is I kind of like them. They're games that legends are made out of. They're things that you talk about at the water cooler. You know, it's the badge of honor that I stayed up to watch it. Putting all that aside, some of the discussions we've had with the competition committee revolved around the fact that maybe after 1 or 2 periods, instead of saying 5-on-5 skaters, we go to 4-on-4 to try and open it up a little more and make it more likely a goal would be scored. But nobody's ever seriously discussed putting in the shootout for the playoffs. It's great for the regular season, better than a tie, which you would never see in the playoffs, obviously. But for the playoffs, we think there's nothing more exciting, better in sports than overtime sudden death playoff hockey.
Bingo.
Bingo is right.
Yep.
Let's see. Anthony from Florida. How you doing?
I am doing well, Gary. How are you? And hi to you too, Billy.
Hi. How are you?
Billy.
All right. I'm getting younger, I think.
Yeah, really?
That goes with Gary. Gary and Billy.
Okay.
I'm here in South Florida. I do not have Versus available on my cable system, so I have become a fan of Center Ice Online because I have a broadband connection and watch the games there. I know because of the contractual restrictions, you've got to black out games that are on Versus on the NHL Center Ice package available on DirecTV or whatever. But I wanted to know if there was any basis for the blackout on the Center Ice Online version when the game is on Versus, because obviously if I watch it on Versus, I would. The only reason I'm watching it online is because it's not available to me.
Are you, who's your cable operator?
It's some little cable company that just was now finally acquired by Comcast, but haven't updated the system yet.
Well, you know what? What you should do is call Comcast and tell them you want your Versus and you want it now, because obviously Comcast owns Versus, yeah, and you should be able to get it shortly. You know, without sparing you the legalese of why it is it has to be blacked out, it doesn't work if you can get it on broadband and even when it's not available through your cable provider. The fact that you're now on a major cable system, we're now in 74 million homes with Versus, and even with the remaining homes, I think just about all of them you can now subscribe to the sports tier and get Versus. If you're not getting what you want, talk to your cable or satellite provider, and you should be able to get it. And Anthony, for you, call Comcast, tell them you're anxiously awaiting Versus, and hopefully they can accommodate it.
Okay. Tell them Gary sent you.
Tell them Gary sent you. I don't get a referral fee. Bob in Pittsburgh, you're talking to Bill and Gary on XM204. What can we do for you?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hey. Afternoon.
First of all, Bill, I just want to compliment you. I think you're the best talking analyst out there.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Is this a relative of yours?
No.
not yet, but he's going to be as soon as I can get his number. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Gary, a question I have for you. With the new icing rule they put in a couple years ago, where the committing team doesn't get to do a line change.
Right.
One thing I've seen, many games, season ticket holder going to the games, one team will be pressuring. The defending team ices the puck, and then they go to a deep timeout. That defeats the purpose. I was wondering if there's ever been any thoughts to somehow controlling the TV where they can't take a TV timeout at that point.
By the way, that's a very astute observation. It's something that we've noticed and we've been talking about adjusting as well. You're exactly right, because the theory behind it is when the team on D is tired and needs a break, the notion was we weren't going to let you take it within your control to stop the game and get the line change. You should be out there and you should be tired, and that's something that we're looking at, because that may be a place to tweak the game, because the observation's exactly right. That's what does happen. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, it doesn't seem to make sense, and that's something we need to take a look at.
Love the rule, though. I love the rule. Nobody should end up with a breather just because they shot the puck down the ice for an icing. I love the rule.
And, you know, the companion of that rule is the rule when you shoot the puck out.
Yes.
Even if you're not the goaltender, you get the two-minute penalty, because the theory was, well, if you can't ice it, the way you'll get the break is to shoot it into the stands. The beauty of that rule is it works very nicely with the no icing penalty. The notion here is we want to keep play moving, and if you're going to take it within your hands or within your own self to stop the game, you're not going to be rewarded for it.
All right, we want to ask all of the callers to hang on. We're going to get to your calls as soon as we can. We're expecting to hear from Rennie Fussell, who is the president of the International Ice Hockey Federation, when we come back. You're listening to the NHL Hour on NHL Home Ice, XM204 and NHL.com. Gotta love that. That's Ted Nugent and the Amboy Dukes, Journey to the Center of Your Mind. You wanted Bare Naked Ladies last week, Eric.
No, this is good, too. This is my genre of music.
I love that song. I just downloaded it a couple of weeks ago.
Makes me feel 25 years younger listening to it.
That's Ted. He's the best. Hey, listen, if you want to scream at us, might not be appreciated, but you can go ahead and give it a try. 877-NHL on XM's the phone number, 877-645-6696, the email address, nhlhour@nhl.com. Where do you want to go, Gary? Email, phone?
Let's go to a special guest joining us live from Moscow, I believe, is Rennie Fussell, president of the International Ice Hockey Federation. Rennie, are you with us?
Yes, I'm in St. Petersburg, just to correct.
I'm sorry, but I knew you were in Russia. My geography was a little off. How are things? It must be after midnight there, am I correct?
Yes, it's 25 minutes after midnight. That's correct.
Well, thank you for staying up to be with us. I think to start, for our listeners, would you be kind enough to explain what the International Ice Hockey Federation is and what your role is?
The International Ice Hockey Federation is the governing body for ice hockey. We have 65 members. And we organize a different world championship, participating in the Olympics, promoting and developing and helping the National Federation to make the game better and just having fun.
Having fun is what it's all about. In addition, the IIHF, the International Ice Hockey Federation, and the NHL do a little business together in terms of negotiating a transfer agreement. Would you like to explain what that's all about and whether or not a transfer agreement is important, a good thing or a bad thing, and how it works?
Oh, I would say that the transfer agreement is very important. Actually, we came together, you remember, Gary, I think it's 12 years ago, where we started to think about European players moving to the NHL, to North America, and just to have a better control of this player moving. And we decided to sit together, and then we started to speak about the Olympics. We spoke about the World Cup. We spoke about the World Championship. And today, I think we say that we have a very good partnership and cooperation, and we have a very good understanding. And I think, and we also think here in Europe, the leagues and the National Federation, it's very important that we have this partnership and we have this agreement just that we can control the players who are moving to the NHL.
As important as the agreement is, for the last 2 years, the Russians haven't participated. Maybe you'd like to enlighten our listeners as to why it is when the rest of the hockey world has come together to provide for the orderly movement of players between Europe and North America, the Russians have chosen not to be a part of that.
Actually, I mean, it's a little bit sad because, I mean, the Russians were the first to come and visit me 12 years ago to ask me to help them because, as you remember, after the break of the Soviet Union, a lot of players were moving to the NHL, to North America. And we couldn't control it. They couldn't control. And then we find an agreement. And I would say that the other federation were not so happy because they had already an agreement with you. But at the end, we could convince this the whole family that they have to stick together. And today, actually, we have a very, very different situation in Russia. As you know, I mean, there is a lot of money. We have a lot of people. They have a lot of money, the so-called oligarchs, and the governors in the different region. And they spend a lot of money. I mean, they have some teams, I would say, have even a higher budget than teams in the NHL. And that makes this situation very special, that the Russians, they do not want now to join the agreement.
Do you think that's a question of economics, or do you think it's just a question of there are some people in Russia who just don't want to see their best players leave Russia and play somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, you know, but I mean, the very best players, we remember the situation with Alexander Ovechkin and Malkin. I mean, these two boys, that they wanted to play definitely in the NHL, and they left. The other players, for sure, there are some, and that they would like also play in the NHL, but they do not have the caliber as Malkin and Ovechkin. I would just say that in the past, we had a very good experience with Russian players in the NHL. We had very good ambassadors of Russian hockey in the NHL. I just say Fetisov, Larionov, Fyodorov, Kovalchuk, and Kovalyev. I mean, all these names, they are just wonderful players. And it's for sure, I mean, the Russians didn't compete so well on the international games in the World Championship. And they thought, I mean, it's maybe because of the players are moving to North America and not playing in Russia. And it's a situation which is very difficult to control at the moment. But it takes a little bit of time and patience, and people will maybe find a better way to have a cooperation with us and with you.
Well, actually, we and you just reopened the transfer agreement, as we each had the right to do. Do you think that's a good thing or a bad thing? Are you troubled by that? What was the motivation from the IIHF standpoint to reopen the agreement?
No, I think, Gary, you know, we had to reopen the agreement. I mean, also you decided to reopen the agreement. We have to find a way how we can solve the situation. Actually, this year we had 59 players signed an NHL contract in June. Today, 7 came back. 52, these are our numbers, 52 are now in North America, and only 6 are playing in the NHL, only 6. And you will pay us around $14 million. That means for 6 players, you play $14 million. That's way too much.
We agree. But that's why we've reopened it. What's all this talk about a new Super European League? What's your view of its likelihood of success? And what's the IIHF's role in this regard? And to our listeners, this is Rene Fazel, who's joined us, who's the president of the International Ice Hockey Federation. Rene?
Yes, you know, I mean, this is. I think it's a very good idea what they have. I mean, to try to restart a league as they had during the Soviet time. Maybe the hockey fans, they will remember that in the past they had this very famous and very, very strong and powerful Soviet league with teams from Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Belarus, and Latvia, and Russia. And the idea was to restart this kind of league and maybe even have some teams from Asia. But I think it's a good idea, especially for teams from Kazakhstan, Ukraine, Belarus, and Latvia, that they can compete in a higher and very competitive league. On the other side, they are thinking about taking teams from Western Europe, and I think this will not fly, definitely not fly. I would just tell you the story about 10 years ago when in football, soccer in Europe is very, very strong and very rich. 10 years ago, 14 clubs, the so-called G14, they came together and they wanted to build and create a European soccer league, football league. It didn't fly. It cannot fly. And you can imagine, I mean, in hockey, if you have a team, take Zurich or Helsinki, they will participate in this Russian league with 16 Russian teams. I mean, the logistics to fly, to go from Helsinki to Khabarovsk, I mean, it takes maybe 8, 9, 10 hours flight. I mean, it's no sense. I would say they have to start with the Soviet League, and then if other teams could join, but that will take a longer time to go. I mean, bringing and taking clubs out of the leagues in Sweden, Finland, Switzerland, or Germany, that cannot fly.
You're very involved in the IOC, the International Olympic Committee. I think you're the chief of facilities operations for Vancouver. What can we expect from the 2010 Olympics?
The best ever. The best ever. I tell you, I mean, I do everything, especially the hockey tournament. But if I speak about Vancouver, I mean, we have a very good cooperation. These people are working really, really well. I mean, very serious. I mean, typically Canadian, you know, I mean, they do everything to do the best. And the hockey tournament will be just exceptional. I mean, we will have not too much flying time or traveling time for the players. We will have a fantastic venue with the GM Place and a great hockey tournament. And we're going to play on NHL size. I mean, it's especially for the NHL players will be something very special. And I'm really expecting to see that. You will see the Europeans will be very strong.
There's always been a debate about whether or not professionals, particularly in hockey, should go to the Olympics. Would you share with our listeners both the IIHF's view and the IOC's view as to the appropriateness or not of having professionals represent their countries at the Olympics?
Gary, you and me, we have a very important role. I mean, you on your side, you have the best league in the world. You have to promote the game. I mean, you have to, for sure, on the business and the economical side, it's very important. But to promote the game of hockey, I mean, this is your job, and it's also my job on my side. And we together, we can really bring the game of hockey in very popular and in a very good level, and can be, if we work very hard, we can be number one after football. I mean, especially, I mean, globally. And the best thing to promote our game when we have 2 or 3 billion TV spectators during the Olympic Games and having this stage, we have to have the best players
of our game playing in the Olympics. This is a must.
Renee, I know it's late. I thank you for staying up and joining us. I'm going to let you go. I congratulate you in advance for the 100th anniversary of the IIHF, which is coming up in 2008. And thanks for all you do for the game. Be well, Renee, and I'll talk to you soon. Happy New Year.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye, Gary. Bye-bye.
Well, that's fascinating. I already know what's wrong with the NHL hour. It needs to be the NHL 2 hours.
Not on your life.
But I get 10 questions, and I'll never get to them because our board is all lit up here with callers that we're going to get to. We'll step out and come back with the NHL Hour. Gary Bettman will answer your questions here on NHL Home Ice, XM 204, and NHL.com.
On January 1st in Buffalo. Now for my question. Do you see the league expanding deeper into Canada, that is Hamilton, Winnipeg, Kitchener-Waterloo, anytime within your tenure as commissioner? I know you are sick and tired of this question, but we all know that it will never go away. Actually, I'm not sick and tired of the question because I always want the opportunity to answer it, because my position and the league's position has been mischaracterized consistently, particularly over the last year, on the subject. We haven't ruled any place in or out. What we've said, and I said this last week on the show, if we relocate, which is something we try to avoid, or if we decide to expand, we are going to consider all of our options everywhere, and obviously there are places that don't have hockey teams now that could support them and would do very well and would love to have them, which is why if we get to the point of either relocating or expanding, we're going to look at everything.
How much longer do you plan on being commissioner?
That's a good question.
Because that might give us a little...
My contract has a number of years to run. If you ask me its expiration date, right this second, I couldn't tell you because I'd never focus on it.
All right.
It's something I don't look at, because as long as I'm enjoying what I'm doing and as long as the owners are enjoying what I'm doing, I'll continue doing this. But I have a number of years to run, and I think this is the greatest job going. There are some days that people will make me want to scratch my head about why I do this, both internally and externally, but every day I come charged up to work. This is a job where if you don't have the passion for it, you can't be doing it. It takes too much out of you, and I'm fortunate that I have an extremely supportive family, because you can't throw yourself into something like this that really is 24/7 if they're not going to not only be supportive but be very tolerant of what you do. It's not something I focus on.
Let's pick an arbitrary number, and I'm going to pick it. 7 years.
That's not that long.
Is it likely that we will see expansion or will not see expansion?
You know, Bill, I don't know the answer to that.
The process work then? Does one of the owners come to you and say, hey, look, no, let's talk about expansion?
It's not quite that loose. It's a function of two things. It's a function of the state of the health of the business and the health of our franchises, and it's a function of the interest that we're getting from places. At the present time, we have interest from a number of different places, both in Canada and in the United States, but it's not something at this particular point we've decided to address in any formal way. I think we're still letting things settle in from the events of the last couple of years, making sure the game is strong. We have lots of franchises that are doing great. Our Canadian franchises as a group have never been healthier or stronger, which is in part a large part a function of what we went through in collective bargaining in the system we have. The franchises that aren't doing as well as we would like are doing better than they were and heading in the right direction. So I think we're still in a settling out period. So I guess it's time to take another phone call.
Yeah, since we're not expanding. Go ahead.
We're just expanding the list of potential callers. I see that Patrick from Virginia Beach has been holding for 38 minutes. I apologize. Welcome to XM 204, Patrick.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. It's a real pleasure to talk to you and Bill. I'd like to sit and talk to you about how well my Capitals are playing under Coach Boudreaux, but I have a question regarding ice, specifically ice at the Verizon Center, which is generally regarded as, if not the worst, close to the worst ice in hockey. And I'm curious as to what oversight the NHL has or any legislative powers. As Ted is a very player and fan-friendly owner, you would think that he would have some say in it. But I know that that facility is owned by Abe Poland, so I'm not sure how much sway he might have. And I'm curious what power you might have.
We are all committed to making the ice as good as possible, which is why over the last few years, very quietly in ways that people wouldn't know about, we changed a lot of rules. If you notice that 15 minutes before the game, I think it is, nobody's allowed on the ice. The two Zambonis go out and they flood it, and we give the ice time to set. We have strict rules on pregame ceremonies. After the intermissions between the first and second and second and third periods, you don't see the players as a group coming out and skating on the ice. We just have the players who are going to be skating for the opening shift out on the ice. If you notice during each TV timeout, there are either guys or girls, you know, with shovels coming out to get rid of all of the snow that builds up along the boards and in front of the nets. And we're doing lots of things to try and make the ice as good as possible, including we employ Dan Craig at the league level, who used to be the ice maker in Edmonton.
He's the best.
And they were long reputed to have the best ice in the league.
Yep.
And he's a consultant. He goes to every rink to try and help improve the ice and make adjustments. The officials file reports with us after every game so that we can make adjustments and see what can be done to improve the ice in a place where we're having problems. The problem stems from the fact, and it's not to make an excuse.
The problem in Washington or in
everywhere?
General?
Okay. Everywhere is, for the most part, we're in multi-use buildings, basketball, hockey, circuses, family shows, concerts. Buildings are being used 200-300 times a year, and sometimes the same day you'll have a basketball game and a hockey game. All of that impacts the quality of the ice, but we've taken lots of steps to try and make it as good as possible, but that's a real good question. Next question we'll take from Vector from San Francisco. You've been on for almost 40 minutes. I apologize. Welcome to XM204.
It's Spectre. Hi, Bill. Hi, Gary. Bill, huge fan of yours, both as a player and a commentator. And Gary, you're okay,
thank you.
Too.
Thank you. I apologize for the name. They printed, they type it up on a screen for me, and that was what was typed.
What's your Vector, Spectre?
my Vector is the Bay Area, Northern California.
All right.
Right.
I have a question, a quick follow-up, and then a really good suggestion for you. The question is, and I have to lay a foundation, as I'm an attorney, so I got to lay the foundation first. But as you know, the Flyers had five suspensions this year. Colin Campbell acknowledged that the suspensions were all separate and distinct circumstances. And then, Gary, you issued a warning to the Flyers. The question and the follow-up are, why did the Flyers get a warning, and what is the warning? And then just let me also just comment on a really good suggestion.
Why don't you give me the suggestion so then we can take...
The suggestion is that the way I look at it, and this affects all teams, I hate seeing players go out with headshots, such as Patrice Bergeron, who was hit by Randy Jones, and Simone Gagné, more specifically because I'm a huge Flyers fan. Why not have an automatic suspension for a headshot, whether it's a clean hit or a dirty hit? I think you would see players cleaning up their game a lot, and they would really be careful where they're checking. Automatic two-game suspension if it's a clean check or something like that, and then go down the line depending on how egregious the hit is.
Actually, the question's good, and let me address the suggestion as well. The media has suggested that what I said to the Flyers was a, quote, warning. You'll draw your own conclusions. Maybe it was or it wasn't. But Coley Campbell and I had a conversation with Philadelphia general manager Paul Holmgren that said, listen, I accept the fact that Coley's view is that these were five independent acts. But you know what? At some point, the team has to acknowledge and hold the players and itself responsible for what goes on the ice, and at some point it just becomes too big a coincidence, and this isn't the conversation I'm particularly interested in having again. And Paul said he agreed, and he understood, and it wasn't a conversation that he was interested in having again. So I think we were all on the same wavelength that whatever was going on, for whatever reason, everybody needed to be as diligent as possible to try to ensure that it didn't happen
and
again.
So there was no or else.
Well, you know.
Okay. Other part of the question.
The automatic suspension, you know, it's interesting. People suggested that when we opened up the game coming back from the work stoppage, we took hitting out of the game and that we made it the no-hit league, which isn't true. If you look at the statistics from last season, there were 45,000 hits in the game, which averages, I think, 47 a game. Game is physical. The checking is as hard, if not even close. It may even be harder than it's been before because there's more open space and there's more speed. So on the one hand, you had some people suggesting that we're taking hitting out of the game. If you simply say any contact with the head under any circumstances results in a suspension, you're going to take hitting out of the game. And of those 45,000 hits, there were probably a dozen that we had to look at carefully and less than a handful that really were over the line and required some sort of discipline. And so the question is, in a physical game like ours that moves as fast as ours, do you do something to protect four or five hits, maybe even less, and jeopardize the very nature of the game? And it is a very, very tough balancing act. And so it's not so easy to say we're going to lay down a rule and any contact with the head results in a suspension, because you may get a product on the ice that you're not particularly comfortable with.
And I know that hitting would disappear if we ever went to four skaters on four. So forget that idea, everybody.
Let's do John from Ottawa. You have a question?
Hi, Gary and Bill. Just had a question about the salary cap. I was reading an article today in the National Post that the Canadians, they're going on a road trip over Christmas, and they wanted to bring the players' wives and girlfriends down to celebrate Christmas there instead of returning to Montreal and then continuing on the road trip. And the NHL ruled that that would count against the salary cap. So I just had a two-part question. What would the reasoning behind that be?
Well, the static caused it to break up, and I apologize for that, but let me try and answer the question. Must have been a bad cell phone connection. Basically, anything that you provide of value to the players counts against the cap, and the reason for that is if we allowed compensation, things of value to be provided outside of the contracts, outside of the salary cap, there'd be no way to police it. So let's assume that the owner of a team who was at the cap said, I'm going to give each player as a Christmas present a Picasso. And then another team will say, I'm going to give each family that has a player on the team a new car. There'd be no end to this. If you're going to have a salary cap that's effective, if you're going to have one that lets every team compete, and if you look at our competitive balance this season, it's incredible. You have to have limits on what teams do. And while it may seem harsh in a particular instance, if you make exceptions, the exception will swallow up the entire system.
Makes a lot of sense. I never considered that. Last time I checked, Picassos aren't going cheaply these days.
They never do. Let's take another question. Tom from Connecticut, what can we do for you? You're on XM 204.
Hello, Gary. Hello, Bill. Big hockey fan here, always looking for ways to promote the game and the players, and some are harder than others to implement. But I was watching the shootout the other day, and it just sort of dawned on me it's a great opportunity to promote the players and see the players. And my idea was for the player to take off his helmet and his shield for the shootout. You know, you always see the highlights on ESPN SportsCenter, the NHL Network, and I think it'd be a great way to promote the league and the players.
You are 100% correct. I couldn't agree with you more. And in fact, we've asked to have the players have their helmets off for the shootout. And in order for that to become a rule so that they'd all do it, because one isn't going to do it, because I think of the peer pressure.
Sure.
And we've asked the Players Association, and so far the response has been that's not something the players are interested in doing. But the caller is exactly right. We think it would be a wonderful opportunity without risking injury for the players to show themselves off, become more readily identifiable at a very exciting point of the game.
It's great to have your helmet off as long as you score. Because everybody can see who the heck you are.
With all of the television coverage and all of the cameras of the game, there's no place to hide on the ice anyway.
Great. When the idea of the shootout first came up, Gary, were you in favor of it?
Absolutely. I was one of its proponents because I long believed that even if you were sitting in the arena and the home team lost in a shootout, you would feel better about the event than going home with a tie. People overwhelmingly were telling us that, that a tie was unsatisfying.
I can't agree more. You know that at some point, a little bit of entertainment value goes a long way. Hey, happy holidays, everybody, and thanks for being part of the show. Gary, have a great week. Huh?
You too. Happy holidays, and I'll see you back here in 2 weeks.
Yes, you shall. This has been the NHL Hour. I want to let everybody know that coming up next on NHL Home Ice, it's In the Slot, my man Phil Esposito, my man Jim Taddy. Sorry I can't be there today, guys. I've already put my day's work in, okay? As Gary said, we'll be back in 2 weeks. That is Thursday, January the 3rd at 4 Eastern. We'll answer your calls and your emails. Until then, enjoy the hockey between now and then, and happy holidays to all of you. See ya.